Verse 3. The fading away of lust. Monks, if wanderers of other sects ask you, for what purpose, friends, is the spiritual life lived under the ascetic Gotama? Being asked thus, you should answer them thus. It is, friends, for the fading away of lust that the spiritual life is lived under the Blessed One. Then, monks, if the wanderers of other sects ask you, but friends, is there a path, a way for the fading away of lust? Being asked thus, you should answer them thus. There is a path, friends, a way for the fading away of lust. And what, monks, is that path, that way for the fading away of lust? It is this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. This is the path, the way for the fading away of lust. Being asked thus, monks, you should answer those wanderers of other sects in such a way. Or else you may answer them. It is, friends, for the abandoning of the fetters, for the uprooting of the underlying tendencies, for the full understanding of the course of samsara, for the destruction of the taints, for the realization of the fruit of true knowledge and liberation, for the sake of knowledge and vision, for the sake of final nibbana without clinging that the spiritual life is lived under the Blessed One. Then, monks, if the wanderers of other sects ask you, but friends, is there a path, a way for attaining final nibbana without clinging? Being asked thus, you should answer them thus. There is a path, friends, a way for attaining final nibbana without clinging. And what, monks, is that path, that way for attaining final nibbana without clinging? It is this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right concentration. This is the path, the way for attaining final nibbana without clinging. Being asked thus, monks, you should answer those wanderers of other sects in such a way. Samyutta Nikaya 45-41 through 48. Combined 5, 27 through 29. Part 2. Analysis of the Eightfold Path. Monks, I will teach you the noble eightfold path, and I will analyze it for you. Listen and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir, those monks replied. The Blessed One said this. And what, monks, is the noble eightfold path? Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And what, monks, is right view? Knowledge of suffering, knowledge of the origin of suffering, knowledge of the cessation of suffering, knowledge of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is called right view. And what, monks, is right intention? Intention of renunciation, intention of non-ill will, intention of harmlessness. This is called right intention. And what, monks, is right speech? Abstinence from false speech, abstinence from malicious speech, abstinence from harsh speech, abstinence from idle chatter. This is called right speech. And what, monks, is right action? Abstinence from the destruction of life, abstinence from taking what is not given, abstinence from sexual misconduct. This is called right action. And what, monks, is right livelihood? Here, a noble disciple, having abandoned a wrong mode of livelihood, earns his living by a right livelihood. This is called right livelihood. And what, monks, is right effort? Here, monks, a monk generates desire for the non-arising of unarisen evil, unwholesome states. He makes an effort, arouses energy, applies his mind, and strives. He generates desire for the abandoning of arisen evil, unwholesome states. He generates desire for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. He generates desire for the continuation of arisen wholesome states, for their non-decline, increase, expansion, and fulfillment by development. He makes an effort, arouses energy, applies his mind, and strives. This is called right effort. And what, monks, is right mindfulness? Here, monks, a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings in feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating mind in mind, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed longing and dejection in regard to the world. This is called right mindfulness. And what, monks, is right concentration? Here, monks, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a monk enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion, with the subsiding of thought and examination. He enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. With the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare. He is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and dejection, he enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. This is called right concentration. Samyutta Nikaya 45.8, 5, 8 through 10. Part 3. Good Friendship. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans, where there was a town of the Sakyans named Nagaraka. Then the Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said, Venerable Sir, this is half of the spiritual life, that is, good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. Not so, Ananda, not so. This is the entire spiritual life, Ananda. That is, good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. When a monk has a good friend, a good companion, a good comrade, it is to be expected that he will develop and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. And how, Ananda, does a monk with a good friend, a good companion, a good comrade, develop and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path? Here, Ananda, a monk develops right view, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. He develops right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing in release. It is in this way, Ananda, that a monk with a good friend, a good companion, a good comrade, develops and cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path. By the following method too, Ananda, it may be understood how the entire spiritual life is good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. By relying upon me as a good friend, Ananda, beings subject to birth are freed from birth. Beings subject to aging are freed from aging. Beings subject to death are freed from death. Beings subject to sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair are freed from sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair. By this method, Ananda, it may be understood how the entire spiritual life is good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. Samyutta Nikaya, 45.2, 5.2-3. Part 4. The Graduated Training. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. 2. Now on that occasion, the Brahmin Janusoni was driving out of Savatthi in the middle of the day in an all-white chariot drawn by white mares. He saw the wanderer, Pailatika, coming in the distance and asked him, "Now, where is Master Vakchayana coming from in the middle of the day?" "Sir, I am coming from the presence of the ascetic Gotama." "What does Master Vakchayana think of the ascetic Gotama's lucidity of wisdom? He is wise, is he not?" "Sir, who am I to know the ascetic Gotama's lucidity of wisdom? One would surely have to be his equal to know the ascetic Gotama's lucidity of wisdom." "Master Vakchayana praises the ascetic Gotama with high praise indeed." "Sir, who am I to praise the ascetic Gotama?" "The ascetic Gotama is praised by the praised as best among devas and humans." "What reason does Master Vakchayana see that he has such firm confidence in the ascetic Gotama?" 3. "Sir, suppose a wise elephant hunter were to enter an elephant wood and were to see in the elephant wood a big elephant's footprint, long in extent and broad across. He would come to the conclusion, 'Indeed, this is a big bull elephant.' So too, when I saw four footprints of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, 'The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way.' What are the four?" 4. "Sir, I have seen here certain learned nobles who were clever, knowledgeable about the doctrines of others, as sharp as hair-splitting marksmen. They wander about, as it were, demolishing the views of others with their sharp wits. When they hear, 'The ascetic Gotama will visit such and such a village or town,' they formulate a question thus: 'Who will go to the ascetic Gotama and ask him this question? If he is asked like this, he will answer like this, and so we will refute his doctrine in this way. And if he is asked like that, he will answer like that, and so we will refute his doctrine in that way.' They hear, 'The ascetic Gotama has come to visit such and such a village or town.' They go to the ascetic Gotama, and the ascetic Gotama instructs, urges, rouses, and gladdens them with a talk on the Dhamma. After they have been instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened by the ascetic Gotama with a talk on the Dhamma, they do not so much as ask him the question, 'So how should they refute his doctrine?' In actual fact, they become his disciples. When I saw this first footprint of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, 'The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way.'" 5. "Again, I have seen certain learned Brahmins who were clever. In actual fact, they too become his disciples. When I saw this second footprint of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, 'The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened.'" 6. "Again, I have seen certain learned householders who were clever. In actual fact, they too become his disciples. When I saw this third footprint of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, 'The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened.'" 7. "Again, I have seen certain learned ascetics who were clever. They do not so much as ask him the question, 'So how should they refute his doctrine?' In actual fact, they ask the ascetic Gotama to allow them to go forth from the household life into homelessness, and he gives them the going forth. Not long after they have gone forth, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, they here and now enter upon and dwell in that supreme goal of the spiritual life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the household life into homelessness. They say thus, "We were very nearly lost. We very nearly perished. For formerly we claimed that we were ascetics, though we were not really ascetics. We claimed that we were Brahmins, though we were not really Brahmins. We claimed that we were Arahants, though we were not really Arahants. But now we are ascetics. Now we are Brahmins. Now we are Arahants." When I saw this fourth footprint of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, the Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. When I saw these four footprints of the ascetic Gotama, I came to the conclusion, the Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way. 8. When this was said, the Brahmin Janusoni got down from his all-white chariot drawn by white mares, and arranging his upper robe on one shoulder, he extended his hands in reverential salutation toward the Blessed One, and uttered this exclamation three times, "Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the Blessed One, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one. Perhaps sometime or other I might meet Master Gotama and have some conversation with him." 9. Then the Brahmin Janusoni went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down to one side and related his entire conversation with the wanderer Pilataka. Thereupon, the Blessed One told him, "At this point, Brahmin, the simile of the elephant's footprint has not yet been completed in detail. As to how it is completed in detail, listen and attend carefully to what I shall say." "Yes, sir," the Brahmin Janusoni replied. The Blessed One said this. 10. Brahmin, suppose an elephant hunter were to enter an elephant wood and were to see in the elephant wood a big elephant's footprint, long in extent and broad across. A wise elephant hunter would not yet come to the conclusion, indeed, this is a big bull elephant. Why is that? In an elephant wood, there are small she-elephants that leave a big footprint, and this might be one of their footprints. He follows it and sees in the elephant wood a big elephant's footprint, long in extent and broad across, and some scrapings high up. A wise elephant hunter would not yet come to the conclusion, indeed, this is a big bull elephant. Why is that? In an elephant wood, there are tall she-elephants that have prominent teeth and leave a big footprint, and this might be one of their footprints. He follows it further and sees in the elephant wood a big elephant's footprint, long in extent and broad across, and some scrapings high up, and marks made by tusks. A wise elephant hunter would not yet come to the conclusion, indeed, this is a big bull elephant. Why is that? In an elephant wood, there are tall she-elephants that have tusks and leave a big footprint, and this might be one of their footprints. He follows it further and sees in the elephant wood a big elephant's footprint, long in extent and broad across, and some scrapings high up and marks made by tusks and broken off branches. And he sees that bull elephant at the root of a tree or in the open, walking about, sitting or lying down. He comes to the conclusion, this is that big bull elephant. 11. So too, Brahman, here a Tathagata appears in the world, an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one, having realized with his own direct knowledge this world with its devas, Mara and Brahma, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, with its devas and humans, he makes it known to others. He teaches a Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and expression. He reveals a holy life that is perfectly complete and purified. 12. A householder or householder's son, or one born in some other clan, hears that Dhamma. On hearing the Dhamma, he acquires faith in the Tathagata. Possessing that faith, he considers thus. Household life is crowded and dusty. Life gone forth is wide open. It is not easy, while living in a home, to lead the spiritual life utterly perfect and pure as a polished shell. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard, put on the ochre robe, and go forth from the household life into homelessness. On a later occasion, abandoning a small or a large fortune, abandoning a small or a large circle of relatives, he shaves off his hair and beard, puts on the ochre robe, and goes forth from the household life into homelessness. 13. Having thus gone forth and possessing the monk's training and way of life, abandoning the destruction of life, he abstains from the destruction of life. With rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful, he dwells compassionate to all living beings, abandoning the taking of what is not given. He abstains from taking what is not given, taking only what is given, expecting only what is given. By not stealing, he dwells in purity. Abandoning sexual relations, he observes celibacy, living apart, refraining from the coarse practice of sexual intercourse. Abandoning false speech, he abstains from false speech. He speaks truth, adheres to truth, is trustworthy and reliable, one who is no deceiver of the world. Abandoning malicious speech, he abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those people from these, nor does he repeat to these people what he has heard elsewhere in order to divide these people from those. Thus, he is one who reunites those who are divided, a promoter of friendships, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, a speaker of words that promote concord. Abandoning harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. He speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. Abandoning idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. He speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and the discipline. At the right time, he speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. He abstains from injuring seeds and plants. He eats only one meal a day, abstaining from eating at night and outside the proper time. He abstains from dancing, singing, music, and unsuitable shows. He abstains from wearing garlands, smartening himself with scent, and embellishing himself with unguents. He abstains from high and large couches. He abstains from accepting gold and silver. He abstains from accepting raw grain. He abstains from accepting raw meat. He abstains from accepting women and girls. He abstains from accepting men and women slaves. He abstains from accepting goats and sheep. He abstains from accepting fowl and pigs. He abstains from accepting elephants, cattle, horses, and mares. He abstains from accepting fields and land. He abstains from going on errands and running messages. He abstains from buying and selling. He abstains from false weights, false medals, and false measures. He abstains from accepting bribes, deceiving, defrauding, and trickery. He abstains from wounding, murdering, binding, brigandage, plunder, and violence. 14. He becomes content with robes to protect his body and with alms food to maintain his stomach. And wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him. Just as a bird, wherever it goes, flies with its wings as its only burden, so too the monk becomes content with robes to protect his body and with alms food to maintain his stomach. And wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him. Possessing this aggregate of noble moral discipline, he experiences within himself the bliss of blamelessness. 15. On seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at its signs and features. Since, if he left the eye faculty unguarded, Evil, unwholesome states of longing and dejection might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the eye faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on feeling a tactile object with the body, on cognizing a mental phenomenon with the mind. He does not grasp at its signs and features, since if he left the mind faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of longing and dejection might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the mind faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the mind faculty. Possessing this noble restraint of the sense faculties, he experiences within himself an unsullied bliss. 16. He becomes one who acts with clear comprehension when going forward and returning, who acts with clear comprehension when looking ahead and looking away, who acts with clear comprehension when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts with clear comprehension when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts with clear comprehension when eating, drinking, chewing, and tasting, who acts with clear comprehension when defecating and urinating, who acts with clear comprehension when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. 17. Possessing this aggregate of noble moral discipline, and this noble restraint of the faculties, and possessing this noble mindfulness and clear comprehension, he resorts to a secluded resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle thicket, an open space, a heap of straw. 18. On returning from his alms round, after his meal he sits down, folding his legs crosswise, setting his body erect, and establishing mindfulness before him. Abandoning longing for the world, he dwells with a mind free from longing. He purifies his mind from longing. Abandoning ill will and hatred, he dwells with a mind free from ill will. Compassionate for the welfare of all living beings, he purifies his mind from ill will and hatred. Abandoning dullness and drowsiness, he dwells free from dullness and drowsiness. Percipient of light, mindful and clearly comprehending, he purifies his mind from dullness and drowsiness, abandoning restlessness and remorse. He dwells free from agitation with a mind inwardly peaceful. He purifies his mind from restlessness and remorse. Abandoning doubt, he dwells having gone beyond doubt, unperplexed about wholesome states. He purifies his mind from doubt. 19. Having thus abandoned these five hindrances, defilements of the mind that weaken wisdom, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, he enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. This, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata, something scraped by the Tathagata, something marked by the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way. 20. Again, with the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion, the Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. 21. Again, with the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata, But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. 22. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and dejection, he enters and dwells in the fourth Jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion, the Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. 23. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the recollection of past lives. He recollects his manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world contraction, many eons of world expansion, many eons of world contraction and expansion. There I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my life term. And passing away from there, I was reborn elsewhere, and there too I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my life term, and passing away from there I was reborn here. Thus, with their aspects and particulars, he recollects his manifold past lives. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. 24. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings. With the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, he sees beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. He understands how beings pass on according to their actions thus. These beings who behaved wrongly by body, speech, and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong view, and undertook actions based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body, after death, have been reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But these beings who behaved well by body, speech, and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view and undertook action based on right view, would the breakup of the body after death have been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, he sees beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and he understands how beings pass on according to their actions. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata. But a noble disciple does not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. 25. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the destruction of the taints. He understands as it really is. This is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. He understands as it really is. These are the taints. This is the origin of the taints. This is the cessation of the taints. This is the way leading to the cessation of the taints. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata. Something scraped by the Tathagata, something marked by the Tathagata. But a noble disciple still has not yet come to the conclusion. The Blessed One is perfectly enlightened. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One. The Sangha is practicing the good way. Rather, he is in the process of coming to this conclusion. 26. When he knows and sees thus, his mind is liberated from the taint of sensual desire, from the taint of existence, and from the taint of ignorance. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands. Birth is destroyed. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. This too, Brahman, is called a footprint of the Tathagata, something scraped by the Tathagata, something marked by the Tathagata. It is at this point that a noble disciple has come to the conclusion, the Blessed One is perfectly enlightened, the Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, the Sangha is practicing the good way. And it is at this point, Brahman, that the simile of the elephant's footprint has been completed in detail. 27. When this was said, the Brahmin Janusoni said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark so those with good eyesight can see forms. I now go for refuge to Master Gotama, to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of monks. Let Master Gotama accept me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge from today until life's end." Majjhima Nikaya 27. Kulahatthi Padopama Sutta 1.175 through 184. Part 5. The Higher Stages of Training with Similes. 12. Here, monks, a monk resorts to a scheduled resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle thicket, an open space, a heap of straw. 13. On returning from his alms round, after his meal he sits down, folding his legs crosswise, setting his body erect and establishing mindfulness before him, abandoning longing for the world, as in preceding text, stanza 18. He purifies his mind from doubt. 14. Monks, suppose a man were to take a loan and undertake business, and his business were to succeed so that he could repay all the money of the old loan, and there would remain enough extra to maintain a wife, or, considering this, he would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a man were afflicted, suffering and gravely ill, and his food would not agree with him, and his body had no strength. But later he would recover from the affliction, and his food would agree with him, and his body would regain strength. On considering this, he would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a man were imprisoned, but later he would be released, safe and secure, with no loss to his property. On considering this, he would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a man were a slave, not self-dependent, but dependent on others, unable to go where he wants, but later he would be released from slavery, self-dependent, independent of others, a free man able to go where he wants. On considering this, he would be glad and full of joy. Or suppose a man with wealth and property were to enter a road across a desert, but later on he would cross over the desert, safe and secure, with no loss to his property. On considering this, he would be glad and full of joy. So too, monks, while these five hindrances have not yet been abandoned in himself, a monk sees them respectively as a debt, illness, a prison, slavery, and a road across a desert. But when these five hindrances have been abandoned in himself, he sees that as freedom from debt, recovery from illness, release from prison, freedom from slavery, and a land of safety. 15. Having abandoned these five hindrances, defilements of the mind that weaken wisdom, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, he enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. He makes the rapture and happiness born of seclusion drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the rapture and happiness born of seclusion. Just as a skilled bathman or a bathman's apprentice heaps bath powder into a metal basin and, sprinkling it gradually with water, kneads it until the moisture wets his ball of bath powder, soaks it, and pervades it inside and out, yet the ball itself does not ooze. So too, a monk makes the rapture and happiness born of seclusion drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the rapture and happiness born of seclusion. 16. Again, monks, with the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. He makes the rapture and happiness born of concentration drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the rapture and happiness born of concentration. Just as though there were a lake whose waters welled up from below, and it had no inflow from east, west, north, or south, and would not be replenished from time to time by showers of rain, then the cool fount of water welling up in the lake would make the cool water drench, steep, fill, and pervade the lake, so that there would be no part of the whole lake that is not pervaded by cool water. So too, a monk makes the rapture and happiness, born of concentration, drench, steep, fill, and pervade the body, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the rapture and happiness born of concentration. 17. Again, monks, with the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, "He is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happy." He makes the happiness divested of rapture drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the happiness divested of rapture. Just as in a pond of blue or red or white lotuses, some lotuses that are born and grow in the water thrive immersed in the water without rising out of it, and cool water drenches, steeps, fills and pervades them to their tips and their roots, so that there is no part of all those lotuses that is not pervaded by cool water. So too, a monk makes the happiness divested of rapture drench, steep, fill, and pervade this body, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the happiness divested of rapture. 18. Again, monks, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous disappearance of joy and dejection, a monk enters upon and dwells in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure, and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. He sits pervading his body with a pure, bright mind, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the pure, bright mind. Just as though a man were sitting covered from the head down with a white cloth, so that there would be no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the white cloth. So too, a monk sits pervading this body with a pure, bright mind, so that there is no part of his whole body that is not pervaded by the pure, bright mind. 19. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilements, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the recollection of past lives. He recollects his manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, as in preceding text, stanza 23. Thus, with their aspects and particulars, he recollects his manifold past lives. Just as a man might go from his own village to another village, and then back again to his own village, he might think, I went from my own village to that village, and there I stood in such a way, sat in such a way, spoke in such a way, kept silent in such a way. And from that village I went to that other village, and there I stood in such a way, sat in such a way, spoke in such a way, kept silent in such a way. And from that village I came back again to my own village. So too a monk recollects his manifold past lives. Thus, with their aspects and particulars, he recollects his manifold past lives. 20. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilements, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings, as in preceding text, stanza 24. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, he sees beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and he understands how beings pass on according to their actions. Just as though there were two houses with doors, and a man with good sight standing there between them, and saw people entering the houses, and coming out and passing to and fro, so too with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human. A monk sees beings passing away and being reborn, and he understands how beings pass on according to their actions. 21. When his mind is thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilements, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs it to knowledge of the destruction of the taints. He understands as it actually is. This is suffering, as in preceding text, stanzas 25 through 26. He understands birth is destroyed. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. Just as if there were a lake in a mountain recess, clear, limpid, and undisturbed, so that a man with good sight standing on the bank could see shells, gravel, and pebbles, and also shoals of fish swimming about and resting. He might think, there is this lake, clear, limpid, and undisturbed, and there are these shells, gravel, and pebbles, and also these shoals of fish swimming about and resting. So too a monk understands as it actually is. This is suffering. He understands birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. From Majjhima Nikaya 39. Maha Asapura Sutta 1, 274 through 280.